The following program features the opinions of the host. Listeners are encouraged to seek their own understanding.
Every culture claims, among its earliest stories, the tale of a great flood that wipes out humanity. The tale of a great flood seems to have first been written down in the Epic of Gilgamesh. As is the case with myths and legends, when multiple cultures share stories, it lends credence to the idea that there is truth to the tale. Such is the case with Noah's flood and the ark he built to survive that cataclysm. There are scholars who believe that this was not the original story. Whether this story were the original or not, the key takeaway is that everything on the face of Earth was destroyed by water, save for the people and animals aboard this large vessel. Why did Yahweh decide to destroy everything he created? Was it to destroy the Nephilim, and were they able to reestablish themselves? Welcome to the Ghost in You podcast, a podcast about the weird, the wonderful, and the terrifying in the Bible. I'm Diane Student, your guide and host on this strange journey through the Bible. Episode 10, Noah's Ark. The story of Noah's Ark is one of the weirdest stories in the Bible. Think about it. First, we have a man who lives to be several hundreds of years old and spends 120 of those years building a huge, seaworthy vessel based on the fact that an unseen God told him to do so. As far as we know, Noah had no experience in shipbuilding. On top of that, Noah has to load this ship with two of every animal, and we're left to assume that these animals come to Noah themselves, because I don't know how he went out and rounded them all up. Then it rains for 40 days and 40 nights, and there's so much water that the entire earth is covered with water, all the way to the mountaintops. Now, there might be some people who say it wasn't the whole earth, but I personally have seen ripples up on the Hogback leading into the foothills of the Rocky Mountains, and there was no lake there. So where did those ripples come from? All of this is very odd. And then there's the big why as to why Yahweh would implement this plan. As a refresher, or for those of you who haven't caught earlier episodes, Genesis 6 verses 1 to 4 reads, "When man began to multiply on the face of the land and daughters were born to them, the sons of God saw that the daughters of man were attractive, and they took as their wives any they chose. Then the Lord said, My spirit shall not abide in man forever, for he is flesh. His days shall be 120 years. The Nephilim were on the earth in those days, and also afterward, when the sons of God came into the daughters of man, and they bore children to them. These were the mighty men who were of old, the men of renown." This passage clearly teaches that Nephilim were around during the time of Noah, a good reason to want to send a great flood. And the passage also reveals that the Nephilim were around afterward. There have been archaeological discoveries through the years of giant-sized human skeletons. So even if the Bible didn't reveal this, we would know that giants on the earth continued. God's plan didn't work in the long run, and since he knows all, he knew that was the case, and yet he still felt that this battle needed to be fought. Let's look at what happened during the time of Noah. That story continues after this passage in Genesis 6, verses 5 to 12. "The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord regretted that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him to his heart. So the Lord said, I will blot out man whom I have created from the face of the land, man and animals and creeping things and birds of the heavens, for I am sorry that I've made them. But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. These are the generations of Noah. Noah was a righteous man, blameless in his generation. Noah walked with God. And Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Now the earth was corrupt in God's sight, and the earth was filled with violence. And God saw the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted their way on the earth." So every thought of man was wicked and evil. I lean towards there being a reason for that other than just humans deciding that they wanted to be really sinful. Something else made them completely corrupted. It says, for all flesh had corrupted their way on the earth. And I believe that was to the very core of being, our DNA. The passage tells us that Noah was blameless in his generation. And I'm pretty sure that isn't just talking about Noah being obedient to God. This started on Mount Hermon with the Watchers trying to have offspring, which they accomplished. And thus far, we have seen no stop to any of that. Then many of us probably question why the animals and birds and creeping things all had to be destroyed. The Watchers seem to have been messing around with animals too, both in trying to copulate with them, but also perhaps in trying to create chimeras. And for people who don't know what chimeras are, those are generally when you mix a couple of animals with each other that should not be mixed together, species, or it could even be mixing a human with an animal. So it reasons that the animals were genetically corrupted too. But some animals had to have been pure as well, since Yahweh told Noah to take a male and female from every sort of animal. And I'm assuming he brought those animals to him, so he knew that these were genetically pure. The other thing to keep in mind is later on in Noah's story, we're going to find out that after he gets off the ark, he's going to get really, really drunk, which is a sin. So if this man is blameless, how does he end up getting really, really drunk? That's why I believe there was something else about him that was blameless. And I think it's that his DNA was not corrupted. Yahweh was specific in how he wanted the ark built. Genesis 6, verses 13 to 22 read, "And God said to Noah, I've determined to make an end of all flesh, for the earth is filled with violence through them. Behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Make yourself an ark of gopher wood. Make rooms in the ark and cover it inside and out with pitch. This is how you are to make it. The length of the ark, 300 cubits. Its breadth, 50 cubits. And its height, 30 cubits. Make a roof for the ark and finish it to a cubit above, and set the door of the ark in its side. Make it with lower, second, and third decks. For behold, I will bring a flood of waters upon the earth to destroy all flesh in which is the breath of life under heaven. Everything that is on the earth shall die. But I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall come into the ark, you, your sons, your wife, and your sons' wives with you. And of every living thing of all flesh, you shall bring two of every sort into the ark to keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female. Of the birds according to their kinds, and of the animals according to their kinds, of every creeping thing of the ground according to its kind. Two of every sort shall come into you to keep them alive. Also take with you every sort of food that is eaten and store it up. It shall serve as food for you and for them." Noah did this. He did all that God commanded him. You've got to imagine when Noah comes to his sons and his wife and tells them, here's what's going to happen. I'm not exactly sure when it's going to happen, but we've got this huge ship we've got to build. And we know that the local people probably came by and were scoffing at him and wondering, why in the world are you building such a huge ship? Where are you planning to go? So Noah gets done with all of this. He gets all the animals on board. They get shut up in the ark. And then we have this miraculous, quote-unquote, rain. Raining for 40 days and 40 nights can leave behind a lot of water. But even during the worst hurricanes, monsoons, typhoons, and such, the world has never been completely covered in water. Genesis 7, verses 10 to 11 reveals what happened. "And after the 7 days, the floodwaters came on the earth." So that's 7 days that Noah and his family were shut up in the ark. So nothing's happening. You got to imagine they're sitting there for a week going, okay, God shut us up in this thing and there's not a drop of water. "In the 600th year of Noah's life, on the 17th day of the second month, on that day, all the springs of the great deep burst forth, and the floodgates of the heavens were opened, and rain fell on the earth 40 days and 40 nights. There are those who believe that before the great flood, there was this arc of water that was in the upper atmosphere that protected the earth. This could be why humans were able to live longer as well. We live, if we're lucky, 80, 90, maybe 100 years. These people were living, as we see, Noah to 600. Others lived to be 900. There are scholars who believe, and archaeologists, and I don't know, people who study the sky, who believe that possibly there was this water vapor type thing up there that kept the sun from causing so much damage to the human body, I guess you could say. When the floodgates of the heavens opened, I believe this water canopy fell to the earth. And that's why you had so much water. And then on top of that, it tells us that we have these springs that came up out of the great deep. I don't know what the earth looked like before the great flood. I don't know if we had these great oceans yet. I don't know if with plate tectonics and all this stuff, if all the plates were together and then they separated now. And as they were separating, this is when the water's coming up and separating the continents into the different places. I don't really know. I don't believe there was as much water on the earth back then as there is today. And so when this water is going to finally recede, I think that's when we're going to get the great oceans that we have. I even believe that this quite possibly was the first time that rain ever fell on the earth. Maybe there never was such a thing as rain before this. We aren't told specifically in the Bible that the watchers literally had to live up to their name and watch their children, the Nephilim, perish in the flood. There had to be a lot of water because these were giants. The Bible tells us the water covered the mountains by 18 inches. And as I was saying, I've been near the Hogback at the Rocky Mountains, so I've seen how tall the Rocky Mountains can be. 18 inches over that? It's a lot of water. The flood had to act much like tsunamis we've witnessed in our present era that flow so quickly that people are not able to climb fast enough to get out of range. And yet the Bible does tell us that these Nephilim were in the lands after the flood as well. Not only in the Genesis 6 passage, but we know, as I talked about on the Nephilim episode, that the tribes of Israel will face these giant-sized people later. Did the flood fail to kill them all? Or was there a second incursion? The Bible says that all life that breathed was destroyed, save for Noah and his sons. But one thing is clear. Men continued being sinful, including Noah and his sons. So this could not have been just to destroy a bunch of really bad actors. Yahweh promised to never destroy man with water again, and he put a rainbow in the sky as a sign. And that's another reason why I think it had never rained before, because it's a scientific fact. When we have rain, rainbows usually follow. This had to have been something special at the time, something Noah had never seen before. So that's why I think this was the first time we had rain. And the Bible clearly says that everything that breathed air died. So I believe that the Nephilim were destroyed in the flood, but the watchers were not. I don't know if the watchers had been punished yet at this time and sent down to Tartarus. I don't know if they can sometimes come out of Tartarus and do bad things again. I don't know if other angels fell and did the same thing. We're not given that information. We're just given the information that they were here again, as I talked about in the Nephilim episode. Men have searched for the remains of Noah's Ark for centuries. Over 200 people from more than 20 countries have claimed to see the Ark on Mount Ararat since 1856. I remember finding a book in my grandma's house back in the 1970s that chronicled one such search. And I've been fascinated with the possibility of the Ark surviving into modern day. And it could have, since Mount Ararat is always covered in ice and snow. But did the Ark come to rest on Mount Ararat? Genesis 8 verse 4 says, "And in the seventh month, on the 17th day of the month, the Ark came to rest on the mountains of Ararat." The Bible only tells us that it was in the mountains of Ararat, not Mount Ararat. Sam Surtisson spent 22 years searching for the Ark, and he claimed he found it in a documentary that was released in 2017. His search focused on a place called the Dur Pinar site that is found on Mount Tenduruk in eastern Turkey near the Iranian border. This covers a 150-meter-long formation in those mountains. Two men, computer engineer and archaeologist Andrew Jones and geophysicist John Larson, use special ground-penetrating technology to get 3D images from an area that Surtisson thought held the Ark. And Surtisson said that the images captured appeared to be some kind of ship. However, despite all these searches, claims, and eyewitness reports, the Ark has never been officially discovered. It seems that Yahweh doesn't want the Ark to be discovered, or maybe the other side has hidden it because it's a bad memory. Or the real truth is that it probably didn't survive the scourge of time and decay. Did Noah build an ark, fill it with animals, and survive one of the greatest cataclysms in human history? The ghost in you knows. Thanks so much for joining me on this episode. If you'd like to send me some comments, you can do that at theghostinyoupod@gmail.com. And please follow us at Instagram, YouTube, and BitChute. May God bless you and keep you. The Ghost in You podcast is researched, written, edited, and produced by me, Diane Student. Our theme music is by Muse Music with Groove Studios. All of the music is by artists from filmmusic.io.